So how have you been, Senator?
You know, busy traveling around the state and, you know, just visiting with businesses and universities and all kinds of other groups. But, you know, good. Yeah, the weather's fantastic. And my kids are happy and healthy and back to school.
Yeah. That's key, isn't it?
Yeah.
Back in the classroom. Good.
Yeah.
Well, let's just dive right into it. We'll talk about a few things. Let's talk about, first of all, that the $1 trillion infrastructure bill.
Yes.
And you voted no.
Yes.
Just tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, actually, you look, I support infrastructure investment. I think we need to invest in broadening our broadband network, improving our airports and our roads and our port system and, you know, all these other things that we consider to be core infrastructure. So that's really popular among the American people. But unfortunately, this legislation had some promise. But as we reached the end, there were some defects in it that I just couldn't overlook. First, I promised my constituents that this legislation, to earn my support, was going to have to be funded without increasing taxes. And initially, it was there. I helped get it there. But some provisions were removed late that would have caused me to violate that promise. It also ended up costing a lot more than we had expected. So that was another downside to it. There were some provisions that were included in it that have nothing to do with infrastructure, things like creation of a civilian climate corps and offering protected classes of individuals special dispensation to get infrastructure. And then the last thing was this thing was tied by Speaker Nancy Pelosi to a larger $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill. And I insisted that, you know, they be considered as separate bills, but she said, no, we're only going to pass one if we consider the other as well. And that didn't seem right to me, that you linked basic infrastructure with passage of a much larger, more controversial bill.
So in a different form, maybe this would have been a different vote.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders, was in town, I think, last week. He wanted to talk about the $3.5 trillion plan.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about, I mean, it seems like such a huge number. What's involved in that?
Well, they're still filling in all the details, but I know they want to create a new entitlement program or a new, you know, automatic program that you received. It's a child tax credit, and it sounds really good, you know, like, hey, gosh, we, you know, if somebody has kiddos, we want to make sure that, you know, they're all doing real well and can take care of those kids. But it would separate the link between receiving government benefits on one hand and work on the other. And we have challenges right now where our employers can't get enough labor through no fault of our workers. I mean, if somebody's paying you a lot more not to go to work, you'd be kind of silly to go to work, right? But we don't want to perpetuate this sort of public policy and punish people effectively for, you know, for improving their circumstances or incentivize people to stay home. So that's the most egregious and maybe the most expensive piece of this overall thing. There's a lot more, frankly, that we don't even know is in this $3.5 trillion bill. It's still, to my knowledge, being written, but it's a grab bag of left-wing priorities that they've been trying to get through for a long period of time. There's talk about trying to decrease the age of eligibility for Medicare. Medicare is already insolvent, and so further undermining Medicare's financial situation doesn't strike me as a very good idea. And if you talk to our medical providers, programs like Medicare and Medicaid don't compensate them for their services. So that means higher insurance rates for the rest of us if they're going to lower Medicare's eligibility rate. That's a sample of what I expect will be a parade of horribles as we learn more about this bill.
I am perplexed about the constant credit to really stay home. And I know our businesses need employees.
Yes.
What's the driving force? Why would this be? And I don't expect you to speak for Senator Sanders, but why do we continue to do this when we have people wanting employees to come in and work for them? The what's the incentive to keep giving?
Senator Sanders, and I'm not casting aspersions, he describes himself as a socialist. Mm-hmm. In fact, he is actually, he's not a Democrat. He runs as United States Senator in his home state of Vermont as an independent, because he's very clear and has been for decades that he is a socialist. And so, you know, this resembles the socialist belief that capitalism is a predatory system, and that you have the workers who are the class that gets preyed on, and so that informs his belief. That's the best I can sort of divine where Senator Sanders is coming from here. But you and I and most Hoosiers regard work as something that is dignifying. It's something that is enriching. A vocation is a really important part of our life. It helps define who we are and to serve another person, a genuine need they have, and to receive something that they have worked hard for in exchange is really, you know, it's a wonderful system, and all of us have an opportunity to benefit through the market system.
I don't know about you, but I was surprised that Senator Sanders was making a stop here. I don't know if it was designed for him to come after Purdue came back, but I was surprised to see Sanders come to Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, look, you know, the Indiana Democratic Party, one has to keep in mind, and I love all my neighbors, and but the activists in the party, those who vote in primary elections, they supported Senator Sanders. They are Sanders supporters. They're supporters of the socialists from Vermont in just a recent election over Hillary Clinton, right? So, you know, clearly they see something there, and he feels at home here in the state of Indiana. I also think there's something to the notion that right now, as our economy has changed and as our society has changed, people do want some more answers about, you know, how we're going to deal with those whose lives are disrupted by automation or globalization. Mm-hmm. And in the absence of solid answers from our elected officials, people tend to turn to populists, whether it's populists on the left or the right. And Sanders offers, you know, that sort of tub-thumping populism that people respond to when you don't have solutions.
Switching gears a little here, I think what's on everyone's mind right now is Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
Well, it's not only a horrific tragedy of implementation of this exit from Afghanistan. It's mystifying to me. What is on the president's mind or his closest advisors when you leave behind Americans, when you keep your promises to the Taliban that you'll leave before the end of August, but you break your promises to the American people that you won't leave any Americans behind. So I'm angry, and I am seeking answers as to how this could have happened. This dereliction of duty, this abdication of responsibility, and I want there to be accountability as well. You know, there ought to be some resignations and some firings on the back end of what may be the worst foreign policy disaster, or one of the worst foreign policy disasters in my lifetime.
So what do we do now? How do you move forward at this point? What's the best course of action?
Yeah, we got to figure out how to get those Americans out. And I'm not certain what all the options are. I would hope that the president has all that laid out in front of him, but I'm not going to assume anything. So, you know, I would note that the British and the French are sending in special forces. They're fighting to get their people out. And it's curious to me that the United States of America, which spends $800 billion a year on our military and has the best capabilities in the world, isn't doing the same. It's tragic that we're leaving behind Afghan partners, but you know, frankly, our reaction here is going to be, it's going to take a long time to repair the damage that's done with our allies. And repairing those relations, you know, we began withdrawing from the airbase without even telling the British and the French. The president didn't respond to Prime Minister of Britain's phone call for 2 days. So we've got some real repairing that needs to occur. And we also have to repair our reputation in the eyes of our adversaries like China. I mean, they see us as weak right now, and I know they question our resolve.
And how do we do that? How do we repair those relationships? What's the plan if you were making a plan?
Well, you know, there's no, you know, sort of rapid panacea to our current challenges. It's like a personal relationship. You know, once trust is violated, it takes a while to work it. You know, back. So it's going to require some robust diplomacy over a period of years. But in the near term, I think there is something that has to be done. We need to start holding some like really probing hearings in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives as to what all the decision points were, why certain decisions were or weren't made, and we'll learn from this so that hopefully this will never happen again. We also need to make sure that, as I said, we get those Americans out. That's going to require oversight in Congress, and to the extent there doesn't seem to be an incentive for the administration to act, we need to create that incentive by continuing to speak out and shine a light on this horrific situation. And then, you know, on the diplomatic front, that's also an opportunity for people like myself in Congress to make a difference, both by doing oversight and visiting foreign capitals and saying, look, you know, we might have really botched it on the exit, but we're still here. We're to be trusted. And if they hear that enough, that will serve as some encouragement to our allies.
Do we have any reason, and it's hard to, I'm sure, guess and make assumptions, but domestically to be in any more fear of our domestic safety?
Yes.
You know, people throw around 9/11 and, mm-hmm. and, you know, I think that worries a lot of people.
We do. Look, Afghanistan did not have to become so destabilized. You know, the worst case scenarios been part of our contingency planning for the withdrawal, then I think the area would be more stable. But beyond Afghanistan, there are a lot of Islamic radicals around the world who could well become encouraged to build on what they regard as accomplishments, as momentum. And there could be some people here in the United States, you know, on visas or whatnot that, or who came into the country illegally through our southern border, that fall in that category, right? So I think there's a heightened risk, and then there's also a risk in other geographies, like, you know, where there is a significant terrorist presence: Syria, Somalia, Yemen. The Islamic radicals or would-be Islamic radicals there, no doubt, will be encouraged by this, and they may lash out against Americans. So I actually think the purpose here was to pivot much of our time and attention and resources towards China. Unfortunately, now we're going to, at least in the near term, be thinking a lot more about homeland security and terrorism.
All right, can be some scary times. It's kind of a, it's kind of a gloomy time, but I'm sure there's reason for optimism.
Yeah, you know, it's. I wish I could come in here and just cheer you up. There is, you know, look, the way I lead my life, we think about all these things. It's my job to think about them and try and act responsibly, but you know, then I that's the macro, the big picture level, right? And then I sort of telescope into my little world at home, you know, mm-hmm. and I have four wonderful kids mm-hmm. and they're back to school mm-hmm. and the weather's great outside. Right. And we live here in Indiana, the best country on earth, and happens to be the best state in this country, although I'm obviously biased. And
I agree.
So, look, I mean, we got a lot going for us, and we're blessed.